Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host is Brian Johnson.
What's up, Charch?
Good to talk to you. It's a beautiful summer day. It's now summertime. It's taken a while, but we are finally at summer. The depressing part, especially for those of us in the northern parts of North America, the days are going to start getting shorter.
Yep.
Come on, already? That's not cool.
And for those who don't know, Minnesota in the summertime is the absolute best at its peak. It's the sun's up at 9:30 at night still.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's and that part is great.
We suffer through the winter.
Yeah, then it's when it's in January, it's dark at 4. So, you know, we pay the price for it other times.
I'll take Minnesota winters over living in Florida or Arizona in the summer all day, every day.
I can't do Florida. I can't take the humidity.
I used to live in Northern Virginia, D.C., and those summers were intolerable.
They're tough. Yeah.
Awful.
I can do Arizona. Even though I know it's literally 120 degrees some days in the summer, but to me, the whole dry heat thing, it works.
Yeah, way better than humidity.
It is. We're going to dive into the AFC North, and a little bit like we did with the AFC East last week. The goal here is to tell you not what each team did last year, because you already know that, but it's really forward-looking, Brian, as to what each team is going to do this year, which players we've identified that we like, how we think this offense is going to work, coaching changes, personnel changes, all the stuff you need to know for the four teams of the AFC North. And before we get to that, let's mention GuillotineLeagues.com.
Okay.
We are now open for business for the 2021 season. If you've always wanted to try a guillotine league, this is your chance. We support private leagues. If you've got 17 other people, well, actually or less, you can have a private league with as few as 8. If you've got friends you want to play with, you can join a private league. Or if you don't have friends you want to play with, then you can join one of our public leagues, available at a wide variety of price points, depending on the prizing you'd like to win. So we encourage you to check that out.
Yeah, I encourage you to join both. Especially the brand new Super Chop format.
Super Chop. Tell people about the Super Chop format, Brian.
Win the big bucks. Quickly, it starts out as a regular guillotine league, but less teams. 12
teams.
The 12-team league.
Yep, 12-team league. 12 teams, 12 leagues with 12 teams in each league.
Start week one, of course, and just like standard guillotine execution, team eliminated every week. But when you're the last man standing, you join the other last men or women standing for a brand new draft, sort of brand new league.
Yeah,
for
after the playoffs. After week 11, when you win your league,
the Super Chop playoffs.
Yes, all the leagues, all the league winners get together for a fresh draft of players, and then you play out the playoffs. Last team standing wins the whole thing up to $15,000.
You do this kind of format so you can have the big bucks at the end. Yeah, it's very
correct.
Exciting.
Up to $15,000 with the Super Chop at GuillotineLeagues.com. Brian, let's begin at the AFC North with the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, for regular listeners, they may know that this is your new adopted favorite team. You were previously on the Giants. You gave up on them. And
yeah,
Dave Gettleman.
Years ago. Yeah. And they still pay Dave Gettleman, so I refuse to give them
right.
my
so
fanship.
Let's go to a team that you're following very closely and has, I think, maybe if you'd asked me to pick the team in the AFC that's going to improve the most by wins, I might just pick the Bengals, where not for the fact that there's two other really good teams in that division, but I think the Bengals get so much better this year.
I do as well. And reality football aside, they're going to be one of the most fun fantasy football teams in that division. Real quick to recap last year, Zach Taylor is returning as the head coach. He also acts as the offensive coordinator for the Bengals. I believe this will be his second year, maybe his third year. Still a very young coach. Last year, Bengals finished 30th in yards per game, 29th in points per game. Obviously, things went way south when Joe Burrow went down in week 11 with a knee injury. He was posting pretty good numbers.
Very good numbers.
The Bengals weren't really necessarily winning games, but Burrow was also just getting murdered behind that offensive line, which we'll get into. But The Bengals passed the ball a lot. They passed the ball over 60% of the time last year. That was 13th most in the league. They only ran the ball 39.5%. That was bottom 12 in the NFL. So they were much more of a pass-friendly team. That's because they were
behind
from behind a lot. And don't expect that to change a whole lot. Not a ton of draftable players for the Bengals. It's really starting with the highest drafted guy, Joe Mixon, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and then Joe Burrow. We won't even really talk about the tight ends. And to follow the script from last week, we'll start with the riskiest guy based on ADP.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people would lean Joe Mixon off the top of their head just based on last year. Only played six games, totally lost season. But he's not the riskiest guy for me. It's Ja'Marr Chase, who one of the three elite Bengals wide receivers.
Yeah.
Amazing talent. Coming out of LSU, as we all know, first wide receiver drafted in the NFL draft. Did not play last year, though, but right now for LSU, that is. So I'm a little concerned there.
He can have a slower ramp up. It's possible.
Certainly can. But right now, he's going off the board wide receiver 26 overall.
That's so high.
And the highest of the Bengals wide receivers.
Yes.
Now, granted, T. Higgins is wide receiver 27.
Okay.
He's right there.
Right there. But T. Higgins has proven himself to be a very good player, like
absolutely.
We thought he was going to be. And I don't think they're suddenly going to change the whole scheme just to fit a rookie receiver.
No, and don't forget Tyler Boyd, who is going wide receiver 33, not far behind these guys. Mm-hmm. If I'm strictly talking wide receivers, I'm going with the cheapest guy in Boyd, who is a proven contributor with very high upside in most weeks, at least when Joe Burrow is healthy. So for me, Ja'Marr Chase, I'm out in redraft, of course. I like his long-term prospects a lot more than this year. But wide receiver 26, when I can take a more proven guy like Chase Claypool, Juju Smith-Schuster even, and Odell Beckham, a little sketchy, I'd rather take my chances on those somewhat proven commodities over Ja'Marr Chase, who, again, a rookie, sat out last year. Maybe Joe Burrow isn't at 100% after last year. Will the line keep him alive again this year?
Well, that is a fair question, because the line continues to be ranked. I think Pro Football Focus ranked the Bengals coming into this year. So the current offensive line, I think they ranked them 30th.
Yeah, they were off. The Bengals did draft Jackson Carmen, offensive tackle out of Clemson, in the second round. So they bolstered that line a little bit. But yeah, I'm just out on Ja'Marr Chase in redraft this year. Again, two very good wide receivers in the room with him. And also, the guy with the most upside is there, who could soak up significant targets and touchdowns, and that is Joe Mixon, who I am going with as the player with the most upside.
Okay.
He's going mid-second in most leagues, like RB12, which feels just about right for me, for Mixon. People just remember last year, he played six games, didn't do much when he played, just a total lost season. But the years before, Mixon was seeing bell cow usage, 292 opportunities in 2018, and that's carries and targets.
Yep.
Then in 2019, 323 opportunities. Wasn't really racking up the touchdowns then, but that was John Kitna, and I don't know what other mess of
course. John Kitna.
Or not John Kitna. I didn't do that on purpose.
Andy Dalton.
They're essentially the same person at this point.
One had no hair, and one had red hair. That's a key distinguishing feature right there.
Yeah, my bad. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's
basically
fine.
The same player. Yeah, no, they're not Joe Burrow.
Gio Bernard's gone, and so there's a lot of people think Mixon could be sitting on a bigger PPR season than he's had in recent years. And that might be another factor in the case of Mixon. I'm surprised he's going where he's going. I really thought after last year, and the fact that Mixon's never been a gigantic fantasy producer. You know, he's never been like a top five fantasy producer. He's always been like RB10, RB12, RB8. I thought that coming off this lost season that he would fall farther than RB12, that he'd be more like 15, 16, 17. You get him in the middle of the third round. I don't think, you know, middle of the second round to me for Mixon feels, like you said, it feels about right.
But again, he stays healthy. Burrow stays healthy. That receiving group fully clicks. That line takes the next level.
If the line is not awful,
There's top five upside for Joe Mixon. I'm not saying he'll get there, but the upside exists.
See, I think Burrow's fascinating. Just so many ways for him to win right now with the three receivers, Mixon catching the ball. I just feel like, and Burrow looks so good.
He was clearly a candidate for highest upside, too.
Yes.
Quarterback is, this is like the deepest class of quarterbacks I can remember. Yeah,
so
in
many teams
football.
Are set at quarterback. Yeah. It's so crazy.
There is certainly upside for Joe Burrow as well.
Let's move over to the Cleveland Browns. Right. And this is an offense that took a massive step forward under who would ultimately become NFL Coach of the Year, Kevin Stefanski. In many ways, Stefanski emulates his former employer, Minnesota, with a run-heavy attack that asks its quarterbacks to execute a handful of key plays rather than asking their quarterback to go, like, win every game with your arm. which I think is very smart, and it turned Baker Mayfield turned in a very good season last year. Cleveland was top five in rushing attempts and bottom five in passing attempts last year, and that's because they've got Nick Chubb, who is awesome, Kareem Hunt, who's very good, and again, I just think philosophically, this is what Kevin Stefanski was raised in, and look what it got them to last year through the playoffs. There's a good team. There was a quote from Travis Kelce about 2 weeks ago in which he said the biggest threat to the Chiefs, I'm paraphrasing, the biggest threat to the Chiefs is the Cleveland Browns, and he's right. Defense massively improved in the offseason.
What was there was a crucial play when the Browns and the Chiefs played in the AFC Championship, right? I remember there was Cleveland got jobbed on something. Rashard Higgins... Remember, it was like the fumble out of bounds and that BS rule.
Right, yes.
And that flipped
fumble
the game
through
upside,
the edge of the end zone deal.
So
right,
the turnover.
That stuff's tough. Baker Mayfield is, doesn't have to throw off him. That doesn't mean that he was conservative in what they asked Baker Mayfield to do. So don't confuse a lack of volume with Mayfield into thinking that they didn't take shots downfield with Mayfield, because they really did. They've got that powerful, effective running game that pinches the defenses up close to the line of scrimmage. And then here comes Baker Mayfield over the top. Now, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt were both in the top 10 in seeing eight men in the box, which, again, I'm telling you, defenses really stacked the line of scrimmage for Chubb and Hunt. So then Baker Mayfield's 9 intended air yards was the NFL's fourth deepest last year. So he's throwing over the box. Uh-huh. And so he was throwing downfield. So even though he wasn't throwing for volume, he was executing the big plays that fantasy owners do want to have. And I love that about Mayfield. And also blessed with the league's longest time to throw Baker Mayfield at 3.05 seconds. That's a full second longer than Ben Roethlisberger, who we'll talk about in a minute. His wideouts, Odell Beckham, returns from his Week 7 ACL injury and is on track to be available in training camp and the start of the season.
I saw someone tweet, and it's probably true. I didn't verify it, but the last time Odell Beckham was a wide receiver, one, a top 12 wide receiver, so was Jordy Nelson.
Are you serious? Yeah. God, that feels like a long time ago, doesn't it? Wow. Odell's first, or the six full games that he played last year in his first year with Kevin Stefanski, were very inconsistent. He had two very good games. He had two very bad games and two just right in the middle. Stefanski has been adamant that OBJ is part of the team's future, that they plan to use him significantly. And really, when you look at the rest of the Browns wide receivers, Odell Beckham is going to be a big part of this, because the other guys really aren't all that promising, I don't think.
Jarvis Landry, no love?
Well, we'll get him. Okay. I did say all of them. Troubling last year, Odell Beckham had the league's lowest yards after catch, 1.8 yards. He played six games. I mean, that's not like a two-game sample size. That's a six-game sample
1.8
size.
1.8 yards?
He had 1.8 yards after catch for Odell Beckham, and that should worry you.
You can fall forward for...
Yes, you can fall forward for 1.8 yards. Jarvis Landry is a known quantity who's been incredibly consistent throughout his career. You know the deal here. Short targets, short catches, few touchdowns. You want like 4, 5, 6 touchdowns in a season. Jarvis Landry's your guy. Donovan Peoples-Jones saw his snap count skyrocket in the second half of the season, and then later into the playoffs. He put together three really strong games in December, which gives you a suggestion that he will continue to get more use this year. And in this, his second season, Donovan Peoples-Jones, there's a scenario here. If you believe Odell is kind of cooked between the injuries and, you know, how long it's been, you mentioned Jordy Nelson era, how long it's been since he was a really good wide receiver. There's a scenario where Donovan Peoples-Jones gets a lot more time. And then that doesn't all have to come out of Odell Beckham. You know, your outside receivers to start the season are going to be Odell Beckham, Landry in the slot, and Donovan Peoples-Jones. Rashard Higgins is out of this thing, I think.
They did draft, and I'm not too concerned this year, but Anthony Schwartz in the third round. I don't know if you're going to get to him.
He's a speed guy, speed guy. I don't think he will be a reliable factor this year. I like that they added a speed guy, though, because as I mentioned earlier, Baker Mayfield, these deep passes that he throws, they don't have speed at the receiver position until he came along. And so I think he's going to be at all. He will splash with some big plays over the course of the season, but I don't expect him to be a sizable factor throughout the year. Fantasy owners are going to be frustrated again by the Browns' tight ends.
Yeah.
This is a mess. Sophomore Harrison Bryant only posted one fantasy-relevant game as a rookie last year. But
and I called it on this show.
You did. That was very impressive. He had a two-touchdown game last year, and you called that. And I don't know if... Was Hooper out that game? I mean, I don't think part of it
was. No, he wasn't. It was just a great matchup,
and
it was.
Yeah,
and I remember rolling him hard on DK because he was like two grand, you know.
Yeah, super cheap. I'm sure.
And Beckham probably just got hurt and stuff like that. So anyway,
so Bryant averaged about 40 snaps per game, which is more than you want if you own Austin Hooper, but not enough if you own Harrison Bryant.
Yeah.
So that part's a little bit troubling. Austin Hooper averaged 51 snaps a game. That's only an 11-snap difference. If you think Harrison Bryant gets better this year, his snaps could go to 50. Austin Hooper could regress down to closer to 40, and maybe those two swap for each other. And basically, the long short of it is neither one is all that fantasy viable because there's just too much competition at the tight end position.
Yeah, not in redraft. I like Bryant from a dynasty perspective.
Yeah, I do too. So Hooper's contract, by the way, since you're talking about it, I looked it up. Hooper's getting cut at the end of this year. 2022 is his. There's a big jump in Hooper's salary. They're not going to pay him that. So Hooper will either get restructured or cut at the end of this year, and then it's Harrison Bryant's job in 2022. All right, let's talk about the running backs. It's a contract year for Nick Chubb, and he is going to get paid, and I think it'll probably be by Cleveland because this is a run-first team, and they know Chubb is great. Last year, as I mentioned earlier, you saw eight men in the box more than any other player with his number of carries. He had 190 carries, and he saw more eight men in the box than anybody else. Yet, he somehow finished first in yards per carry over expectation at 1.75 yards per carry over expectation, according to Next Gen Stats. And his 5.6 yards per carry was second only to J.K. Dobbins, who we will talk about later.
Yeah, if Kareem Hunt wasn't in the picture, by the way, probably the two best running backs ever play together in NFL history, possibly.
That's a good combo.
Hunt's got his stains on his career, of course, but if Hunt was out of the picture, Chubb is right in 101.
Oh yeah,
right.
You know, if you told me that Kareem Hunt's going to go down in a freak dirigible accident in week one, Chubb could be the first player taken, for sure. As it stands, Hunt siphons off work, but I wonder if ultimately, in some ways, it doesn't serve to keep Chubb healthy and efficient, so that Chubb doesn't hit the 300 touch mark, which we kind of love as fantasy guys. But on the other side of it, Chubb's always. Because of the relatively modest volume that he gets, he's always fresh, and he runs so hard. Hunt did sign a contract extension last year, but averages almost as many total touches as Chubb does, in part because he catches more passes, but Hunt's receiving is weirdly underutilized in this offense. They only throw to him three times a game. So, Hunt to me is a prototypical flex player. I don't think I want him as an RB1 or 2 if I can avoid it. He feels like a flex-style running back. So who's the riskiest player at his current ADP? I think it is Kareem Hunt. He's going off the board as running back 22, which is kind of a lot when you know that the best work goes to Chubb, and Chubb is so good. the player with the most upside compared to ADP, I really struggled with this. Yeah. Really struggled with this. I ultimately settled on Odell Beckham, who's currently wide receiver 26th going in the sixth round.
After Jamar Chase, who we just talked about.
After Jamar Chase,
give me Beckham over him all day.
Right. Baker threw 26 touchdowns last year. Let's say Baker gets a little bit better this year. Another year in this system, and Odell Beckham is healthy all season. You know, what if he gets to 30 touchdowns? How many of those 30 go to Odell Beckham? Jarvis Landry's not a touchdown guy. Kareem Hunt might catch 4. You think Chubb might catch 2. Tight ends might catch 8. I mean, you know, 10 could go to Odell Beckham. So I think he's the player with the most upside. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll break down Baltimore and Pittsburgh, our favorite players versus ADP, our riskiest players ADP. We'll break down their 2021 offenses when we come back. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchin and Brian Johnson with you. We're breaking down the AFC North and the Baltimore Ravens, Brian.
Yeah, we just talked about a very run-heavy team in the Browns, but no team was more run-heavy than the Ravens last year, who ran the ball 55% of the time. Yeah. That was the highest clip in the league.
Now, of course, they run their quarterback more than any team in the league, and that adds to the overall run total.
It definitely does. And if you have the highest run play percentage, that means you have the lowest pass play percentage in the league. Baltimore dead last there, of course. 9th in points per game last year. The offense was very effective, but only 19th in yards. In essence, it took a major step back from 2019 when it was the most exciting offense in the NFL. Same coaches in place, though, from last year and 2019. John Harbaugh at head coach, Greg Roman at offensive coordinator, so no big change there.
Now, Roman says, and he says this like every offseason, we're going to pass more.
Yep.
But you know what? To some degree, Greg Roman just is Greg Roman, and you know he is the guy who you know we've learned that Greg Roman is. He is a run first offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and they've got some good running backs in tow with J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, who they like a lot, and even Justice Hill. Justice Hill isn't chopped liver by any means.
Well, he's played like chopped liver in the smattering of work he's gotten in his career.
Chopped liver is the saying, though, right?
It is the saying. Yes. I don't know what it means other than who wants to eat chopped liver?
Some people. But
have you ever even eaten liver?
I have, and I did not like it.
I didn't like it either. I grew up in a household where my mom loved liver.
Yeah, cow tongue, too?
Nope. Okay. Thank God. And when my dad would go out of town, which he did all too often for work, she would then use that as the opportunity to cook the liver because she didn't have to hear any flack from my dad. And that meant me and my brother got stuck with the plate that shows up for dinner with liver and lima beans. You're like, oh man.
I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but have you ever had octopus?
Yeah.
So good. Like some of the best meat I've ever had.
I wouldn't go that
big,
far.
Thick tentacle. Really?
No, it's so chewy.
You didn't get the good
rubbery
stuff then.
Maybe I didn't. I mean, yeah, I got some bad octopus.
If it was in Minnesota, we don't get the best seafood here. Yeah, but anyway. Right.
That might be part of it.
What were we talking about?
Well, Greg Roman for a while. But
and the running backs.
On, yes.
Well, we'll stick with the running backs, and I'll call out my riskiest player for the Ravens, and that's J.K. Dobbins, who is the highest Raven drafted among all positions. Right now, he's going off the board at running back 16. Right after DeAndre Swift, Antonio Gibson, before guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Miles Sanders, Josh Jacobs. We don't really like him here on this show. But guys, we do like Chris Carson right after there. So looking at Dobbins, just worried about the volume again. We saw it last year. Didn't get a ton. Baltimore.
He didn't need a ton, though. At the end of the year, when he was getting just like 12 touches, 14 touches. He was cashing in those opportunities.
He was, yeah. He scored in 7 straight games from week 11 to the wild card game. He totaled 8 touchdowns during that span. But again,
and that was when they started to phase out Mark Ingram in the second half of the season, and they started ratcheting up his workload, not to workhorse caliber.
But it was still just like an even split with Gus Edwards. Like you said, during that hot stretch, he'd never topped 15 carries. Never had more than 2 catches in a game.
And the thing is, he didn't need him, though. He was still effective.
But he was effective, but I don't care. Looking at his ADP, where he's getting drafted.
It's expensive for a guy who touches the ball 13 times a game.
I need more guaranteed touches, and I think he has 250 opportunities, carries, and targets this year, not the 300 to 325 that I'd like to see from guys going right in his range. Again, I think CEH gets that kind of volume. Antonio Gibson, hopefully, and guys going after. Chris Carson, we like a lot. And way down the list, not way down the list, but RB25, Miles Gaskin. I would rather wait around, take Miles Gaskin than take J.K. Dobbins. I just think there's he could live up to that ADP. I don't see him going higher than RB14, but I certainly can see him going lower just based on the volume. And, of course, Lamar Jackson steals touches at the goal line and all
and everywhere else.
Everywhere else. So that there's that. Let's talk about Lamar Jackson really quick. 2 years ago, led the NFL in passing touchdowns.
Yeah, unbelievable, right?
Right.
Passing touchdowns.
Last year, only 26.
Yeah.
Didn't have any wide receivers last year, though. His wide receivers were better in 2019. Mark Andrews took a step back. Long story short, I think there's room for Lamar Jackson to get better as a passer. People are writing him off as of right now.
They added a first-round pick to the wide receiver group, which I'm sure you're going to talk about in a minute, and that's promising.
Yep. And Jackson was a candidate for my highest upside player. He could easily revert back to 2019 form. That whole team could. And if he does that, then he's – you know, he's the bell of the ball all over again.
But he's not your highest upside player because I know who it's going to be, I think you and I are in lockstep on this.
Play the Rouser, the University of Minnesota Rouser.
No. Oh, no.
You were thinking Mark Andrews?
No. Gus Edwards. Nobody wants Gus Edwards, and he gets half the carries in the run. The most run-heavy offense in the NFL.
That is, I do like the angle there. But
I love that angle. I would rather pay Gus Edwards' ADP. We look at his ADP. I don't have it in front of me. Gus Edwards' ADP than J.K. Dobbins' ADP. To me, it's not even all that close.
Oh, no, it won't be close at all. Gus Edwards is going to be RB35.
Right, he's like round eight.
I'm still going with Rashad Bateman, though, who's wide receiver 67 right now. And he is the best wide receiver
on the roster. He probably is the best receiver.
He is the best wide receiver on roster. Yes, he is a rookie, of course, but polished route runner, great hands, not a freak athlete, but he is a fine athlete without a doubt. And when you look at the range of guys going before Rashad Bateman, I want to barf. Henry Ruggs, T.Y. Hilton, Jalen Reagor, Mecole Hardman, Corey Davis.
Yeah.
Bateman is the number one wide receiver on the team. Not the number one receiver. That's Mark Andrews, who's also a candidate for downside. Downside for me.
You think so?
Because at tight end four, he sees under 100 targets. He's going after guys like Hockenson and Pitts, who are going to see 100-plus targets in my mind. But I still think Andrews can live up to that ADP at tight end four. But anyway, it's Rashad Bateman for me. I think he leads the team, at least the wide receivers, in targets, catches, yards. He's going to be a safe 7 to 8 targets per game guy, I feel, 4 to 5 catches with a significant upside in it. Wide receiver 62, there's plenty of room.
There's plenty of room there. Gus Edwards, ADP. As I recall, it's round eight, but I could be wrong about that. And I think he's going off the board like running back 40, something in that ballpark. And to me, that's just, it's such good value for a guy you know is going to get almost half of the work. And they love to use him near the stripe. They, you know, they'll run Gus Edwards near the end zone. So,
RB 43.
There we go.
Pick 150. Help me with that math. Round
150.
Yeah, it's like round 12.
Yeah, that's right. It's lower than I thought. I said eight earlier. It's like round. Yeah, it's like round 11.
He's right in the right in like the kind of the backup range you expect. The Tony Pollard, Nyheim Hines, Jamal Williams. Yeah,
but
territory.
The difference is I know Gus Edwards is going to get a bunch of carries in every game, and that I can't say that about those guys.
Okay, RB 40, RB 41, RB 43. Which one are you picking? You got Zach Moss, Tony Pollard, Gus Edwards.
I like all three guys.
I do too.
I like all three guys. But I would take Gus Edwards in most formats because of the certainty of his role. You know, Tony Pollard, he only had like two fantasy relevant games last year.
Yeah, he still needs
he probably does. Or Zeke has to just get even worse than he was last year, which is possible. Zach Moss is, you know, well, I think there's a good opportunity to buy low on Zach Moss. We still have plenty of questions about him. We discussed him in detail in the last podcast last week.
All right, so we got co-upside players for the Ravens. Edwards
I'll
and Bates.
Sure.
I like it.
Let's pivot to the Pittsburgh Steelers. First, understand my predilection on the Steelers overall this year. I see massive risk with this team, and I'm going to outline it for you over the course of our conversation here. This is a team that in almost every scenario, I will not take a Steeler at his average draft position. And I see a very possible, significant real-life regression and fantasy regression for the Steelers. They have a great defense, and that's going to keep them, I think, at around the 500 mark for total wins, that defense. But I'm very nervous about the rest of the team. So let's talk about beginning with the quarterback. In his 18th season, Ben Roethlisberger is teetering on cooked. Cooked. He played badly for stretches last year, and his arm was clearly degraded from previous seasons, I felt. Now, remember, the season before last, he missed the whole year. Mm-hmm. Then last year, he came in, threw a lot of passes because the running game was terrible, and at the end of the day, he ultimately got to decent stat lines, but just the eye test, if you watched, you know, two Steelers games, you know he didn't look the same.
It was painful.
He didn't throw deep. And that was the biggest change from last year. He used to be, you know, this big statuesque figure in the pocket and slinging deep balls around. He threw the fifth shortest average intended yards, and in part because he had the fewest time in pocket, barely 2 seconds to throw the ball. No starter had less time in the pocket than Ben Roethlisberger. Also with Ben, you know, he offered the team an off-season pay cut, which has this underlying suggestion that Ben believed that he might get replaced or cut or whatever. And he, early in the season, went to the team and said, I'll take a pay cut to play one more year. That worries me a little bit.
Does he have imposter syndrome now?
Right? That's a great question. I mean, it feels that way, doesn't it? You know, I think just, you know, last year, I feel like he succeeded from a fantasy standpoint more just like grit and volume than actual ability anymore. He did score in every game last year, and that part was great. But I'm nervous about the volume coming back and some other things. Last year, he threw 608 passes, which was second most of any of his seasons. And in addition to the 608 passes, remember, he threw 68 times in the playoff loss. One game, 68 passes. I worry about all of that volume on his arm in this, his 18th season. The good news is he's surrounded by weapons, and we're going to talk about them in a second. The bad news for Ben is the offensive line is ranked 29th by Pro Football Focus for this coming season, and the team barely addressed it in the offseason. They've got three new starters, none of whom look promising. They have one returning starter, Chukwuma Okafor, and he's flipping from right to left tackle. You know, I don't want a new left tackle for Ben Roethlisberger, other than the fact that last year's was terrible, but I don't want a guy who's not familiar with the position going to left tackle.
Yeah, they only drafted one lineman in the draft, and that was the fourth round.
Yep.
Dan Moore.
Dan Moore, that's it. I just don't know how does Ben get better with a makeshift line that's being reconstructed on the fly without obvious talent improvements. Remember, they lost Marquise Pouncey, retired in the offseason. This is a bad line. Maybe the worst line in football. So let's talk about the receivers for a minute. Deontay Johnson managed to get himself benched for drops last year, as you'll probably remember. But he's a high-volume guy. He ranked sixth last year among all wide receivers in targets, even with the benching. And that allowed him to lead the Steelers in targets and yards. He's now in his third season. He could get even better, and he could pull away from the rest of the pack of the Steelers' wideouts, especially if he can convert more of those passes into touchdowns, which he was just a so-so touchdown producer last year. Juju Smith-Schuster re-signed with the team, and remember, he went into free agency as an unrestricted free agent, and he had, like, no takers. And eventually, after, I don't know, like 10 days of free agency, Juju just re-signed with the team on a very team-friendly deal.
I think the Patriots could have gotten two Jujus for what they paid, like Nelson Aguilar.
I know. God, it's such a bad deal. The issue for Juju and what you need to know about him, the lack of depth of target and yards after the catch. Juju catches short passes and then gets tackled quickly, that's bad for fantasy. He had the second shortest average depth of target, just 5.8 yards, according to Next Gen Stats. Second shortest average depth of target. And he turned 128 targets, which is plenty, into only 831 yards. That's it. This is a major reversal from the big plays that Juju was making in his first couple of seasons in the league. And it's been this way for 2 years with Juju.
Silver lining, he did finish strong, though, last year. He had touchdowns in 7 of his last 10 games after a very slow start.
The touchdown totals were good for him in the second half, but that was the only thing that saved him and kept him fantasy relevant were the touchdowns.
Yeah, didn't have over 100 yards until that playoff game when he had 19 targets of the 68 pass attempts by Ben.
Juju's 128 targets, and I said only turned into 831 yards. Justin Jefferson turned 120 targets into almost double the yards, 1,400. So then let's go to Chase Claypool, who became the Steelers' downfield threat. He averaged 13.2 yards per target, which was among the deepest in the NFL. He's now in his second year, and he's got room to get a lot better, which is a scary proposition for a guy with his build and ability to win contested catches. But behind this terrible offensive line, does Ben have the time to target Chase Claypool downfield?
Does Chase Claypool give you a little bit of a Kelvin Benjamin vibe?
No. He is. I do not see Kelvin Benjamin.
I hope not.
Yeah. Oh, I got burned so bad on that hot start that Kelvin Benjamin had like 6 years ago.
I'm pretty sure you said he was the best.
Kelvin Benjamin is going to be awesome. No, that did not pan out at all. Again, I worry about setting up Claypool downfield behind a bad offensive line, and that provides the downside for Claypool. Only other receivers of note here, Eric Ebron will be the focal point of the tight ends until Pat Freiermuth is ready to take over next season. Ebron's on the last year of his deal. Freiermuth will be the starter next year for those of you in Dynasty and Empire leagues. You know the deal on Ebron. Medium to low volume, and you're hoping for you get one of his 4 or 5 touchdowns a season.
Man, this division is so, each team is so muddled at almost every position. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of wide receivers.
Tight ends, two tight ends in
Cleveland, two in Pittsburgh. Yep.
It's an issue. You know where the Steelers aren't muddled? Running back.
No.
Najee Harris, it will be the week one starter and likely a workhorse back. He is a true three-down back. Particularly if his pass blocking improves, and it's not bad, but it's got plenty of room to get better. Harris has no threat on roster to take meaningful carries away from him whatsoever. He is built for goal line use. He will get carries inside the 5, and that is a huge ticket to fantasy success. But there are dangers here. First, they need a far more balanced attack than last year, when the Steelers threw the ball the most times in the NFL and they ran the third fewest times. So they need to have more of a commitment to the run, clearly. And I'm sure they'd like to get back to being more of a balanced attack, but they have to for Najee Harris to be as effective as he could be. And then again, and I hate to keep pounding on this, the offensive line is horrible.
You got it, though.
Harris is going to have to make his own yards a lot, and he's not going to get a lot of help. Harris can catch, but will they throw to him? Pittsburgh targeted its runners just 81 times last year, and James Conner was 27th among runners last season in targets. So how much will they throw to Harris is an open question.
You don't want to get too excited about the offseason OTA practice videos, but have you seen some of the Harris footwork?
It looks good.
He looks different than most, for sure.
He is a good player, yeah. And if he had landed someplace else, we'd be talking about Harris as potentially a first rounder had he picked like a perfect landing spot. But as it stands, I'm not sure that this is it. Riskiest player at his current ADP to me is Juju Smith-Schuster. He's wide receiver 32 in the 7th round. And as I mentioned earlier, hard to be a reliable fantasy producer when you're catching the ball at or near the line of scrimmage and doing nothing with it afterwards. And the player with the most upside compared to ADP, probably Chase Claypool at wide receiver 29 in the 6th round. And he's got special traits. He's got a big body, contested catches. And if Ben has still got a 30-touchdown season left in that arm, or even like a 26-touchdown season left in that arm, Chase Claypool, to me, is the odds-on favorite to catch the most touchdowns on the team.
I dig it.
Thank you for listening. We've broken down the AFC North. Next week, AFC... What do you want to do, West? South?
Did you say AMC?
AFC. No, you hear what you want to hear, AMC.
AMC to the moon, not AMC financial moon. Advice. I just want to put that out there.
Let's do AFC South.
Sounds good.
Because traditionally it goes east, north, south, I think west, whatever. So we'll do AFC South next week. We appreciate everybody who listened. Remember to go to guillotineleagues.com. We encourage you to check that out as well. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.